Society for American Baseball Research. Today is July 10th, 2001, and I'm in the home of Aviva Kempner in Washington, D.C. We will be sending a copy of this tape to the Hall of Fame, but Saber reserves the right to distribute the tape or transcriptions of the interview to other researchers. Is that okay with you?
That's fine.
Okay. When were you born?
I was born December 23rd, 1946 in Berlin, Germany.
Okay, I guess that was West Berlin.
Yeah, it was a U.S. Army hospital. My father was the military government, and my mother had been liberated. She passed as a Polish Catholic within Germany.
Oh, okay. Now, your name Aviva, is that a Hebrew name?
Right. My father had wanted, when his child came, to have a bris in Berlin, sort of as a cultural revenge, you know, that's a Jewish circumcision. But when it was a girl, he decided, well, I'll have a Hebrew name, and I can put it on the birth certificate in Germany, so that gave him a lot of pride to be able to do that.
Right. Okay, and how long were you in Germany?
I came to the United States when I was 3 and a half, and we came to Detroit and lived in Detroit. So.
Now,
and my father had come earlier. He had come in the late 20s from Lithuania, and he had joined the military in the early 40s, so it was for him, you know, one way he became American was his love for baseball, as many immigrants. Did and still do.
So the family was in Germany because he was in the military.
Right.
It was part of his service.
Okay. Correct.
Now, of course, you were pretty young when you were in Germany, but they had the Berlin airlift. Do you remember anything about
nothing,
that?
Nothing. I have no memories of Germany at all.
Okay.
Even though we have photographs, I have no memories.
Okay. So you came to Detroit. Was that his home originally?
He came to Detroit because his brother was there, and he decided to settle in Detroit.
Okay, so you grew up in Detroit.
Essentially, I grew up in Detroit.
Okay.
And the most important thing in terms of this interview is I grew up going to a lot of Detroit Tiger games with my father and my brother.
Ask you, in other words, he instilled the sports love in you.
I always remember my father either listening to a transistor to a baseball game or watching TV, listening to a baseball game. And in 73, when he moved to Israel, we call it making Aliyah, you know, settling in Israel. And he said he'd missed two things about the States, his kids and baseball, but I was never sure which order he would miss more.
Okay, so you saw plenty of games out of Tiger Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any particular heroes or favorite players?
Yeah, for my brother it was Al Kaline, and I've given him Al Kaline memorabilia, but for me it was Rocky Colavito. I just loved when he did calisthenics, you know, put the back behind him. He was a very good looking guy. So I think my first crush was that. But I have to say that my brother also played in Little League before. It was sort of parallel that was going to baseball games, and I used to go and watch him play in Little League. As a matter of fact, the first boy I kissed was a Little League, was a pitcher. So I think, you know.
How old were you?
Well, 13, 14. Actually, sadly enough, his name was Jeff Pozola, and he died in Vietnam, and his name is at the end of my film. I have a tribute of, you know, a lot of the people who are in the film who died or people who were very important to me. So, in any event, I remember, it's most of all, I think, Colavito, although I really admire Kaline, and there's Harvey Keene, and, you know, Denny McClain. I mean, it was a great Tiger, especially in the 60s. When we were going to a lot of games. I remember we went to the World Series. The Tigers were 68.
68, yeah.
And heard Aretha Franklin sing the national anthem.
Now, in school, junior high and high school, did you participate in any sports?
No. No, it was more always as a spectator.
Okay. And other than baseball, were there any other sports?
No, I'm not real enamored with football. I mean, I'll watch basketball during you know, the Final Fours, you know, during March Madness. And I've been going to some hockey games. Football, I remember they quoted Shirley Povich as saying, in the bit of them, football eludes me. I don't get it.
Okay. Now, after high school, what college did you go to? Michigan went to college.
I went to, several times. I went to University of Michigan, undergrad in psychology. And as a matter of fact, I didn't even use my football tickets. We had the right to get football tickets. And I remember going to a Rose Bowl and passing out anti-war literature in L.A. You can imagine how popular I was. So it was more politics than the college newspaper.
I guess you used the money for the tickets to get that. get to California.
Yeah. So it was completely wasted on me. Baseball to me is the premier sport. I just love it. I love going to the games.
That's the way a lot of people feel. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why we're sitting here, right?
Pardon me. So you majored in
undergrad in psychology, a master's in urban planning, and then I went to Vista for 2 years in New Mexico. Actually, you didn't probably see any
Vista
sport.
Is something like a local U.S. Peace Corps?
It's a U.S. Peace Corps. V-I-S-T-A, CAP. And then went to, came here to Washington in 73 to go to law school, and much to my chagrin, there was no baseball team.
Been a few years too late,
yeah.
Unfortunately. Did you go to GW or Georgetown Law School?
No, Antioch School of Law, which actually doesn't exist anymore.
Right. And okay, after that, did you practice law then?
I practiced some immigration law and did some Native American rights issues. But then I had an epiphany in 79 after watching Holocaust on TV and Roots to go make a film about Jewish resistance against the Nazis.
Now, did you have any background for this before?
Oh, no, but I had helped other people fundraise for film, and I had used film for politics. So, in that respect, I did.
Okay. And this was your first film?
Right.
What was it called?
It was called Partisans of Vilna, which is about Jewish resistance against the Nazis in Lithuania, both in the ghetto and the woods. And that was finished in 86. And it was interesting, at that time I was thinking a lot about doing something about American Jews during the 30s and 40s. Why didn't they help more of their brethren? And my father had always talked about when he went in the military, he experienced anti-Semitism, that he couldn't get into medical school because of quotas. And of course, every time we went by the Shrine of the Little Flower in Detroit, my dad would point his finger and say, that anti-Semit. And of course, we had heard stories about Ford. So I think I had sort of on my brain Detroit when I was thinking about that. And in September 5th, 1986, I was in Los Angeles opening up my first film for a premiere there, and I heard that Hank Greenberg had died. And that's when I decided. One thing that had always happened growing up is not only would my dad take us to a lot of games, or I do have one recollection, is when Al Kaline, I don't remember what year it is, but he slammed into the outfield wall and it broke his ribs. I remember crying then, and that's all feeling real bad. But it's really Rocky Colavito, who actually I later found out Hank brought to the Cleveland Indians to begin with. In any event, when I heard that Hank Greenberg had died the day before, I had my second epiphany. I just knew I had to do that film, because in a way my first film was my mother, even though she wasn't in the resistance, just surviving about the Holocaust. The second film I wanted to do something about my father's experience.
So and you're a child of a survivor.
Yeah. And my grandparents died in Auschwitz, and my uncle survived it, my aunt didn't, and my father's mother was murdered probably by gunshot. So all three grandparents, one died before, so I never had grandparents, or a maternal aunt that I should have had. In any event, I decided that I should do Hank Greenberg because this was the way to tell the 30s, 40s, but more importantly, I always heard about Hank Greenberg growing up. My dad always would talk about Hank Greenberg and, of course, Sandy Koufax, who was obviously a big hero in Jewish homes. And Hank Greenberg's name especially came up around Yom Kippur time because of his stance or what he did in 34. So it was fun because my dad would tell us the story, always going to synagogue. As a matter of fact, I heard the story so much, I realize now in talking about making the film that I thought Hank Greenberg was part of Kol Nidre liturgy, that we would go to, Kol Nidre is the song they sing the evening of Yom Kippur. And you know, when you're always going to the synagogue every year after year, your dad's always retelling this story, then, you know, that's why it becomes part of it.
Had you ever met Hank Greenberg?
No. No occasion for me. I lived in Washington by then. He lived in L.A., so.
Did you plan to make a documentary from the beginning?
Oh, yeah. No, I always knew that's my format, though, a documentary. And the two big stories I knew were Yom Kippur and not Jackie Robinson, that he almost broke Babe Ruth's record in 38. So what was interesting for me is how Hank has this incredible dramatic career year after year after year, that it isn't just the Yom Kippur story, but it's MVP twice. And the second time at another position, it's Lou Gehrig's record, which, you know, that wasn't actually the numbers recited to me, but it was, you know, obviously the Babe Ruth thing, first one going off to war. And the Jackie Robinson story was like a total find. You know, it just wasn't something that my dad talked about, but as soon as I read the autobiography, no, actually, I started reading before that, because I went to see the family right away when I decided to do it, and they said it would be okay as long as the autobiography came out sooner. Well, little did I know it would take me 13 years to make the film.
I had heard years ago that in 1938, when he challenged Babe Ruth's record, he actually did hit 60 homers, but two games were rained out. I don't know if
No, he didn't. They were rained out in Cleveland, so he couldn't do it.
No, but actually, I mean, they hit home runs, but the games were shortened. In other words, they weren't official games.
No. What happened is there was a rainout, so two games on Sunday, the last games in Cleveland, were played in Municipal Stadium. And it's a bigger stadium.
Right. Than League
and
Park.
The second game, it got dark. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So. Fine. Now, when you started to make this film, was the format similar to Partisans of Vilna?
Well, only in that it was chronological. I decided the best way to deal with Hank is to talk about year after year after year, because there's these great world and national events happening, from the Depression to the outbreak of war to liberation. Second of all, his career, you know, took this great dramatic curve. The big difference with Partisans is with Hank, there's no narration. But there was very little narration in Partisans, too.
Okay. Now, you said it took about 13 years?
It was all about fundraising. It just
okay,
took
that's
many
what I'm
years.
About. First, how do you go about getting money for a film?
Well, the first film, I have a nonprofit that makes the movies. The first film, I got a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. So the rest of the money that I needed was much less than for Hank. I applied for Hank Greenberg, but it was at the same time that Ken Burns was going for his baseball series. So Ken was more successful than I. I got several state humanity boards to give, like Maryland and Washington and Michigan and Illinois.
Pennsylvania?
No, I tried them, because he played for Pittsburgh. I said everywhere Hank Greenberg hit a ball, I try to, you know, fundraise. So it just took many, many years to do it. I also made decisions of getting the best archival footage, searching everywhere I could, using the feature footage, using great stills, and using the best music, all of which would cost a lot of money.
Were there any baseball people involved in who contributed money to this?
Reinsdorf gave me a contribution.
Jerry
Reinsdorf. Greenberg's son had been the deputy commissioner of baseball, and he was most generous. You know, the family, I think. Oh, and Faye Vincent gave me a contribution. But that's because of the relationships with Green Hank.
So over the years, how much did you find? I mean, did it cost?
It cost $1 million to make, but I'm also owed 7 years of salary. Or actually, seven and a half years of salary.
Yeah.
I'm owed.
Yeah.
I owe myself, you know.
Right.
No one else worked for free. Everyone worked by the hour.
Did Saber help out any, or did you know about
Saber? Oh, yes.
I
love Saber because several things. One is whenever we wanted a clear-cut fact check, we would call Saber. What is the gentleman's name before?
The Cleveland office, did you call? Or,
yeah. What's
John Zajac?
No, before.
The president, what it
was? Yeah.
Who Morris Eckhouse?
Morris was wonderful. Saber has a special thanks in the film.
Oh.
Of course. And then there's some individuals who are members of Saber that I had come watch almost the final version to just clarify. Bill Mead is,
Bill,
you know, one of the people in the film and was an He was an advisor. But he was in a film. I would check with him.
He wrote Baseball Goes to War.
Which is why he's in the film. And then, of course, Ira Burkow, I would check with, and Hank's son, Steve. So.
Ira Burkow, with New York Times?
New York Times sports writer, yeah.
Did he cover Hank Greenberg?
No, but he was the editor of Hank Greenberg's autobiography, so he knows more than anyone.
Was, you say fundraising was the biggest obstacle?
Yeah, it was the biggest challenge. Now, one thing that was interesting is, in terms of getting the interviews, is there's a Michigan Jewish Sports Hall of Fame, and every summer they have an invitational golf tournament. So they would have, in Hank's name, the Hank Greenberg Invitational Golf Tournament. So they would have players come and talk. So that's when I got my great interviews, you know, with Bob Feller, Billy Rogel. Well, Hal Newhouser I got on my own, but Blake Lifton, because they would, Bernie Mikulski, they would bring players that had worked with Hank, you know, had played with him.
Yeah. So I was going to ask that question, how did you locate these players?
To the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame, every summer I would film them, and then other people I would find myself, you know.
I guess you did a lot of traveling?
Yeah. It's one reason my back might be living.
Mm-hmm. Now, Billy Rogel, is he still living?
Yeah, he's still in Florida. Yeah, and Eldon Ocker still. Also,
yeah, Eldon Ocker was at our convention.
Virgil Trucks. Yeah, Eldon Ocker.
He's a member of Sabre, and he's doing
a lot of traveling and talking.
Guest speaker the main speaker last year at the West Palm Beach National Convention.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess it looked like Billy Rogel was living down in Florida.
He is. A lot of them settled down there. I think he goes in and sees Ted Williams a lot.
Right. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea how many miles you traveled making this film?
If you combine making it and then speaking about it, thousands. You know what's so wonderful is how people really embraced it. I just read something today about why, I think that baseball is America's favorite pastime. I'm the biggest success story out of that. I mean, the film is. The fact that after 13 years and so much work, that there'd be so many people coming to the film, I mean, was one of the top grossing documentaries ever, and I think the top one on baseball. I mean, it's not fair because some baseball films go right to TV, but
I think
it helped out. It helped the film that there are so many people that are also baseball aficionados.
Yeah.
But it went much farther than that. Women loved the film too.
Now I know it was presented in various venues around the country.
Yeah.
Now I talked to one fella who is in Philadelphia. When you saw it there, most of the people in that audience were elderly people who probably remember seeing Hank Greenberg play. But then I guess there's places like New England down south. How was it received in other regions?
I think what happened is it was cross-generational. You had the grandparents, you had their kids, and you had the children. I think it, and you had a lot of women going. So in that particular theater, you may have seen older people, but I think it went much broader than that.
Well, of course, it was a metropolitan area where...
Right.
Now, were there any people you wanted to interview that for some reason...
I tried to interview Joe DiMaggio through his lawyer, and the answer was no. So I don't know if it was really his lawyer holding him to bay, or it was DiMaggio.
Mm-hmm. And was there anyone... Well, of course, was anybody else that you would wanted to interview that maybe passed away just before?
No. Ted Williams I interviewed by phone, but it just wasn't as good a... interviews, so I wound up not using it. But that may be in the DVD, you know, the film's coming out, World Series this year, on video and DVD.
Okay.
And we'll have more interviews in the DVD that weren't in the film.
Oh.
So we have to advertise that.
Now, how much footage, you probably took a lot of footage, how much weren't you able to use it? How much did you use of the total?
Well, there's hours and hours more, and we're going to pack it up and send it to Cooperstown.
Well, I guess that will be available for
research.
There.
Yeah.
Now, some of these people you interviewed, Bernie Harwell, of course
he's in
Detroit.
Joe Fall, yeah.
Bob Feller, you mentioned there.
Well, he came up. Oh, and Harry Eisenstadt, he came up. They both came up from Cleveland.
And Charlie Gehringer.
I interviewed him.
Did he live in Detroit or in that area?
He lives in Detroit.
Okay. Ralph Kiner,
he came in for the Invitational Golf Tournament. He lives in L.A. and Long Island, I think. Not L.A., Palm Springs.
Now, Alan Dershowitz, a lawyer, how did he fit into that?
Well, I just knew that he loved baseball, and I wanted to find some fans that were reconciled, you know, recognizable.
Non-baseball.
And also, Alan has a lot to say, and I think good things to say about, you know, what it meant to be Jewish during the Depression and during the war. Matthew had spoken at Hank's funeral, so that's why I got him to be in the interview.
Then Senator Carl Levin and Sandra Levin.
I had met them socially. I live in Washington. They were great fans. I said, got an interview.
And Walter Matthau.
He had spoken at Hank's funeral.
And he did the Bad News Bears.
Yeah.
Okay. Michael Moriarty, was that because he was in the movie?
Well, my mother had seen him on TV where he talked about his grandfather helping Hank out during that World Series, you know, when they were, in 35, when they were throwing him all those insidious catcalls. So I knew I had to interview him.
Okay. I interviewed Maury Povich. How about Shirley Povich?
He's in the film. Yeah, no, I mean, he's, I think, the great sports writer ever, and isn't as known nationally as he should be.
What was the funniest thing you ran across during your 13 years?
Interviewing Walter when I asked
Walter
him. Yeah, I said, look at me, because he kept on looking off the set, and he says, your husband has to look at you. I don't have to look at you. And I'm not even married. And then he would... I wanted him to speak Yiddish. And so I said, please speak, you know, you can use Yiddish words. So he would answer me back completely in Yiddish. So.
What was the most distressing or unfortunate thing that occurred?
Just that it took so long to make. But you know, I have this theory. There's all this fate that actually I think the film worked better because it was coming out in 2000, that people wanted to reflect back on the century. I think Mark McGuire's and Sammy Sosa's home run race made people fall back in love with baseball. And I'm just really thrilled on how well it did, and I think partly it's because, you know, of that. I didn't know how much signal stealing there had been, and I think that's what shocked me a little, that, you know, it was so done and seems to be this, not talked about practice in the business.
There's a big thing in the papers a few months ago about the Giants and the Dodgers.
Right.
Do you consider yourself primarily a writer, a producer, a director, or all three?
All three. Yeah. You know what I'm very interested in doing, so maybe we can put a call out, is I'm hoping to do a film about the 100 years of Latin baseball players, if I can get funding. Because I think it's the first 50 years it was light-skinned ones, and then everything that's happened now, and now it's this wonderful explosion.
About 27% of the players are now Latin, Hispanic.
Right.
I know what a director does, and I know what a writer. What does a producer do?
You raise the money, you hire the people, and you worry about paying the bills, or not paying yourself.
Now, Hank Greenberg, obviously, experienced some anti-Semitism during his career. I was wondering, did you run across any of that while you were filming?
No. Luckily, you know. I mean, it was more sexism, people saying, a woman doing a baseball film.
I was nice about being a woman. A
couple people said it to me, but not.
Certainly wasn't a problem.
Yeah, no, because I would go into interviews and know what to ask them. And it's funny, because I've been on sports talk shows, and I got off one in Canada, and they said, boy, she knows a lot about sports. As if, you know, I wouldn't, you know. But it's only baseball I really know, so. And now I call it more contemporary. But there's gaps, times I didn't go. Now I'm, you know, really, really big fan. I go to Baltimore games a lot. But basically, I want a team here. And that's why at the end of the film, and wherever I go speak, I said the film is dedicated to the return of Major League Baseball to Washington. It's ridiculous we don't have a team.
What do you think the chances are?
I don't know. Now they want to downsize the markets. Actually, Selig introduced me at an event, and I dedicated my award there, too.
You know, the Sabre Convention starts tomorrow, and Selig is in Milwaukee. And
oh, really?
He's going to be the main speaker at the banquet there. So I've got a few questions to ask him, of course.
Are you going tomorrow?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
And I'm going to take the tape with me, because a few people have mentioned a few people, and I want to hear it.
Yeah.
Was anything
say hello to Morris for me. And the
he's not there anymore.
The new gentleman is Case.
George Case. The son of...
Yes, please tell him that I've been so crazy, I think I may owe him correspondence, and that I apologize.
All right. In making the film, was anything really surprised you that you really hadn't expected?
Well, you know, the reason I did the film is obviously because he was my father's hero. But as I really studied back then, and I study about baseball, it's amazing how underknown Hank was for all his accomplishments. He's just one of the greatest players, and in terms of social context, amongst adversity. I don't know how he got up to bat every day and heard those kind of catcalling. I mean, there were, you know, there's something about last night's home run derby that Rodriguez didn't even want to go because he didn't want to get the booze, and then they talked him into going. I mean, Rodriguez has no idea what that meant, I mean, compared to what Hank and Jackie got. So I think it's just it's a great American lesson, too. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so glad that, you know, I had a father that taught me about him, that inspired me to make the film, and that now we know. And, you know, there's a lot of other those kind of heroes, too. I mean, you know, the other thing is, he and DiMaggio and Williams and a lot of the other players would have had amazing lifetime career records. Amazing.
Was it for the war?
If it wasn't for the war. So I think there should be an asterisk on all their names saying served in World War One or Two so many years. Actually, maybe some served in World War One.
How do you go about getting a distributor for the film?
Well, we...
Or is this something that's been beginning?
I got a producer's rep, Neil Friedman, Menemcha Entertainment. And we went and had these screenings, and people said, oh, we love the film, but we're scared. So I went and raised more money and hired a company to distribute it. So I guess you got to believe in what people want. And the company was very interesting because Cowboy Booking said, we know this is a niche film. We know Jews will want to see it and baseball fans. We just got to find them all in the niche. And, you know, the film made $1.7 million. Now, most of that went to prints and advertising in the theaters. But still, the film did well, and for their distribution fee. And I'm really proud of that.
So you did get some money back.
Yeah, but that's what we keep on going to market the film. You know, I mean, it just keeps Cheshire going. You know, we have a website, by the way, hankgreenbergfilm.org, which, of course, you know, you said you download from that. Because people want to go somewhere. And now the film is going to be on video and DVD. Yeah. And most of the money that I'm getting from that is paying for the music rights. Right. I'm just now paying the music rights.
Oh, my gosh. Now, when will those be available?
World Series time, October.
Oh, good time.
And the DVD is going to have extra testimony from everyone, from Hal. We're trying to get some stuff from the Williams interview, more stuff from Hank, etc.
Will the videotape have additional footage that wasn't in the...
No, but the DVD will.
DVD.
So people have to buy DVD.
Have a DVD player.
Yeah, but it's $150. It's very reasonable.
Okay. What kind of awards has the film received?
I have to give you a list. It's unbelievable. I'll print you out a list. It's just New York Film Critics, Broadcast Film Critics, National Film Critics, Chicago Film Critics. You want to hit this for a minute because she's going to come in. Yeah. National Film Critics. There's some sports award. Anyhow, she'll bring it down. I mean, I can show you them over there. But
how about
the
Academy? Was it nominated for the
Academy? No, it wasn't. No. You did. Sometimes I'm like Roger and Me and Hoop Dream. Sometimes the most popular films don't get nominated.
Has the reaction to the film moved you in unexpected directions in either your personal or professional life?
There was a screening I was up at Huntington, New York, and I came out and this man was crying. And he says, I've seen this film a third time. And I start crying. I says, and you're still crying. I think that, I'm going to start crying. No, I think I wanted to capture in this film Hank's feats, what he had really accomplished, and love of baseball. And, you know, to make sure to include things like, you always had a national anthem scene. You had to have a player spitting and a player scratching his crotch. I made sure to have all those elements. Plus, just the wonderful, I'm going to divert a little. The wonderful age of, the golden age of baseball. And what Hank keeps on saying, and you use I use his voice as narration in the film, is that he loved the game. They weren't playing for the money. They really loved the game. And, you know, of course, they loved breaking records. So I'm really glad that I was able to give people a sense of what baseball was before it was business. And I think that is one of the film's big accomplishments. I also think one of the reasons I wanted to do the film was to present a Jewish male figure on the screen that wasn't a nerd or a nebbish. And I think the film really accomplished that too. Another thing is, you know, to draw people back to watching baseball. I know there was a lot of women who came out of the film and saying, well, maybe I should go to a game, you know? So I just wanted to affirm what I think is a sport where the player is playing for their skills as well as for the team effort without being violent. I mean, football is just too, you know.
I agree.
So if I could have brought more fans in by people going to games, then, and I know I cried and laughed throughout watching my film being assembled and made with my wonderful editors, Marion Hunter and Judith Sobel. But to have other people react that way, oh, I know, I wanted to finish the thought. It wasn't only Hank's career. It was that I wanted the fan story. I mean, we're all fans. And oftentimes, I don't think you hear fans' voices in films. I mean, it's to me as much as the adulation of Hank and what he meant, especially to young Jewish men, but also, or even still in their older age. It was just more trying to celebrate the relationship between fans and players.
Is there any plans to put this into a book form?
No. I'm tired now. I always thought a photo essay book would be great. You know, ask me in 4 months, the problem is I should have done it already. So I just don't, at this point, probably not.
Any future baseball projects? Sandy Koufax, for instance.
No. Well, Jane's going to do the great book. I don't know if he'd let, if he'd let me do the film, I'd do it. But I haven't even tried to approach him.
You're talking about the Latin.
I'm really interested in doing 100 years of the Latin baseball players. I think it's this great political, economics, skill, human interest story. Of
Dominican
all
Republic, for instance,
it's
city down there.
Yeah, you know, there's been films done on individuals, but as a phenomena, as a 100-year phenomena. There's actually people in Cooperstown that got me going. Cooperstown has just been wonderful. I mean, Dale and I are both from Michigan. Dale and I both went to Detroit games. And when I was there for the last weekend of the close of baseball season, I said, and Dale was speaking, I said, did you ever believe when we were going to Tiger Stadium that we'd be doing this? So we both laughed. We enjoyed that.
Is Dale your brother?
No, Dale Petrosky is the head of Cooperstown.
Oh.
Yeah. No, so I'm saying, you know, I went up to him and was close. No, I mean, it is sad, the closing of these stadiums. Although I think, you know, I go to Camden Yards a lot. I think that's a great stadium for baseball. And, you know, I think what's great is people are going in and out of my film like going in and out of stadiums. And that's, you know, the father with their son or their daughter or the grandparents. And I'm just glad that, to be able to replicate the experience.
Okay, well, I really appreciate the time.
And trying to think
of
other things.
Average person doesn't realize it.
I'm just trying to think. You know, what was great is that the footage we were able to use in the film was because in the movie theaters they would show the great events. You know, it was like news footage. So that was great. It'll be a lot easier for people who do more modern day films to find footage. I mean, it's just film preservation is so important. Photos, of course, you can do a lot to animate photos, but, you know, to you modern day saber historians, you know, just keep on documenting so the future players or the future can learn about the game. I mean, I would hope that this film could be seen by all people in Major League Baseball, and the future players in the filmmakers in the 21st century have your interviews. Or footage, yeah.
Possibly next year we'll probably at the convention maybe we'll show the VCR of it because a lot of people haven't
seen
it.
Maybe we're going to arrange
something. Distribution,
yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
That would probably be a good thing to do.
Yeah.
I was wondering, you're not a Sabre member, are you?
No, I should get
someone like you should.
Yeah, thanks so much, Patrick. I want you to know this was the funniest, the one Ira Burkow loves. Audience Award winner, Hong Kong Jewish Film Festival.
Very good. get around.
Yeah, I didn't go there. Okay, well, thanks so much.
Thank you.